This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Short week this week. Yay! Matt, Brett, David here as well. Brett, let me start with you, if I may. How was your Labor Day weekend, my amigo?
Oh, had a good Labor Day weekend. 3 days, always take that.
You had to get out on the bike. I mean, my goodness, that was just weather for this. Oh, it really is as bad as summer was here. Just got awful hot and dry. September's starting out real nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did go up to Pilot Knob. Which is now kind of more of a Native American heritage site up there. I don't know. Have you ever been up there?
I used to live in that area.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, you go by the cemetery there. Yeah, and it's right there in the top. Gorgeous view of Minneapolis up there. Just an absolutely spectacular view of Minneapolis. And even that is the biggest fields of wildflowers I've ever seen if you go up there. I took a bunch of pictures last year, and I was having a hard time. I think I did use one of the photos from last year in the calendar from up on Pilot Knob. And it is absolutely spectacular with wildflowers. Hardly any up there, not many. It's been a rough year. It's been a rough year. But did that, and then I did get on. I did take a step in my quest to find a new church, a new religion. I don't know if we haven't had an update on that in a while.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Hello. Stopped on by, literally a stone throw, both figuratively and, you know, never mind. It's the Lutherans. They're so close to Catholics that it says. I went up to a wonderful church up on Cedar Lake Road in 169. Went up to enjoy the service up there. They, of course, it's very, very, you know, Davy and Goliath with the organ music. I mean, that's Lutherans. Organ music and trumpet music. There you go. It's the Lutherans. And, I'm still looking around. I had a lot of people, I don't know if you noticed, I had a lot of people that did come on out and give me suggestions on churches I should try. We were in the process of going to ones. We obviously want one that's near our house, not too far away. We're in 5-6 right. miles for sure. But we're looking there. We're going to actually try a few different religions, just see how it goes. And if you don't remember the shows, I got so upset with the Catholic bishop turning communion into a political weapon against Joe Biden that I just said enough's enough. I'm tired of you, and we've walked away from the Catholic Church, and that's our choice. You make your own choices. But we're looking for. My wife and I are both. We liked being Catholic. I liked being Catholic. It just is the church has left us. And so it's become this conservative, you know, Donald Trump who violates the gospel of Matthew on a daily basis is Jesus himself. You know, I'm tired of that. Tired of it. You're hypocrites. That's all it is. Just massive hypocrites. And so I have zero patience for it. I'm looking for a new church. And so I gave the Lutherans a try this weekend. That was nice. And then, of course, I had a family get together. You've tasted my ribs before. Well, I should be careful how I say this. Hello there. My beef ribs I make on my grill, not my regular ribs. You have tasted my ribs before. They are pretty tasty, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I actually made extra for you and Patrick here at the station. Dave, I have none left.
I have my mic on, so we didn't hear you say that, hopefully.
Well, it's good. You guys like the ribs. I made extra, but we had a family get-together, and they plowed through them, man. No cow was safe. It was actually pork. It wasn't beef. It was pork ribs. But no, it was delicious. Had that and got together. Had a little. What else did we do? We had corn on the cob. Little get together. Did some croquet. And nothing gets out of control faster than a family croquet match.
Wait, you did croquet?
Yes.
You can take Matt out of Edina, but you can't take the Edina out of Matt.
No, we're not going to croquet. Okay. First of all right. Before we start getting too highbrow here, I think we've lost like half the wickets. I'm like using a basketball because we don't have it makes it hard getting through some of the wickets at times. There, that's a little narrow. I don't think I'm going to win this game. Take the boy out. No, it's just a fun little family activity out there, and I can't find a jarts set anywhere. You remember jarts?
I do not know.
Oh, those were the metal darts that you threw in the air and you put a ring. and you stood by the ring. This is actually a design child's toy. You take what is basically a medieval spear, chop it off at about a foot, add a fun plastic end to it so it flies through the air, and a handle, all right, on the back end of it. The point of the spear, sharp as ever, on the front end, you grab it from the back end. You basically take a small plastic ring hoop, put it about 20 feet away from you, have your best buddy stand right next while you go stand next to the hoop on the other side. And then the goal is to try to get the jart into the hoop, which they don't
fly. Sure it is.
Oh, they don't fly pretty well. And you would kill a child with a jart today. You would get – they had a modern version which had, like, plastic. And no. These were weapons. This was some sort of Amazonian tribe could take out a hummingbird from 100 meters with this thing. And don't think we didn't try going after some of the birds in the neighborhood with those. They were vicious. And, of course, if you have big brothers like I had – oh, there's, hey, Matt, you got to stay. You know you have to stand right next to the hoop. You know you got to do that. You know you got to stand right next to the hoop. I did not ever have a jart impale me. Once again, I got to be careful how I say that in certain circles. I never had a jart impale me. I got close. I got an inch from my foot, and it would have gone right through my shoe.
Oh.
It would have gone right through my shoe. You've never heard of jarts?
No. You didn't do the old apple on your head with your brother saying, hey, let me see if I can hit this man.
Well, see, with the concept of the jart, it would have actually impaled the apple onto your head, and just you would have had an apple permanently there with a jart. Dear Lord, those were dangerous.
That was a kid's toy, huh?
It was. They marketed that to young children. Here, who likes metal spear tips? Oh boy! And it, they don't. You can find them occasionally in antique stores, with also a disclaimer you have to sign off on. If you want to get one. But, man, that was, you know, it's funny because today I think when I go into a bar or something like that and they're chucking hatchets and axes, I was like, okay, yeah, okay, is this really that far away? I mean, couldn't you make an adult version of jarts and just say you can't sell it to kids? Not for child use? Or are we really that much of a society where I played with these as a kid, I'm going to give my little junior here. And then they sue because junior himself. Impaled. That would be a bad toss if you impaled yourself. Yeah, would you? Once the plastic fins on the back of it got bent, where you threw that thing was really up to God himself at that point. I mean, you were really just taking wind, the magnetic pull of the earth, you know, just the spirits, goblins, whatever was maneuvering that thing. Oh, jarts were great, man. They were great, but they were terrifying. Welcome to my youth. It was kind of like the tone down. There was always a kid that had a switchblade. This was kind of the nicer family version of the switchblade.
Oh, the nicer family version. Okay.
Even I'm not going to buy that one. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We got to get to a few things. Let me start off with the coronavirus update. Should mention Patrick Cooligan is going to be joining Brett here in a little bit. We're going to talk with him, usual weekly visit. Obviously, Stallings is going to be – the whole Stallings case is going to be a big one. That exceptional Dina Winter story that's still today. Star Tribune. Okay, I want to revisit this really quick if I can. Star Tribune, you have two different police officers saying the police like to target civilians. You have – basically, commanders giving orders to cops to go create trouble. You have a lieutenant who apparently so angry that white supremacists were crap here, seems to imply that they need to just go arrest some people to give the white supremacists some cover, whether they were guilty or not of anything. You have Chief Arredondo coming on out this week after the story come to light, basically saying, oh, well, you know, sometimes that peaceful protest can turn. The implication being all protesters get treated the same exact way. Yee. You also have, oh, in case you buried the lead of the most important part of the story, the Minneapolis police on a raid to basically just torment and harass local civilians. Open fire without any kind of warning whatsoever on a man named Stallings. hit him in the chest. That was the first round. Hit him in the chest. But they didn't identify. They announced they were police. He thinks he's under attack from white supremacists, so he opens fire on the unmarked police van that's firing at him unprovoked. And basically, then they come storming out, proceed to beat him profusely. When they're on trial, they were like, "You don't understand. He just shot at us. We were scared." Well, wasn't he scared? Wasn't he just shot at by police who he didn't identify themselves? Or they go, "I got a wife and kids. I got a family. He shot a gun at me. You don't know what was running through my head." Well, I know what was running through his head. The same damn thing, you freaking hypocrites. God, you cops are worthless. That entire SWAT team needs to be canned. Absolutely needs to be canned. "I was not going to see my wife again." What do you think was going through his head, Johnny Shoots a Lot? My God. And then just add a little bit more sugar to this lemonade, huh? Basically went through and prosecuted him with one judge calling into question the mental stability and the mental wherewithal of the police and a jury finding him not guilty. But then stop these guys from targeted, and that's the city prosecutor. Shame on all of you. Shame on all of you. Because you all had the body camera footage. You all saw what really did happen, and you didn't let that stop you, did it? What would this city be like today if the jury had convicted him? And then the body camera video came on out, and we realized he was an innocent man. Holy God. No, well, you know, we'll get to that with Cooligan, Stallings, all that good stuff. I got some stuff to go with that as well a little bit later on. Minnesota coronavirus update. Let's get to that. Monday's COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,000. Now, I should mention that today is Friday's numbers. Tomorrow, you're going to get a 4-day pack. You're going to get Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Those numbers, all for all 4 days. So you're going to have a pretty astounding number tomorrow. This is not 2,088 new cases, 12 newly reported deaths, two which had passed away in September but were finally identified as COVID deaths, 10 of which occurred in this latest wave. State's death toll now is 7,856 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 1st, the state reported that 3,332,860 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine, while 3,134,652 people have completed the vaccine series. 56.2% of Minnesota's total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for vaccine, have completed the vaccine series. That jumps to 66.5% when excluding kids under the age of 12. Also mention that, let's see here, as I shuffle through here, through September 3rd, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 615. That's actually down from 631 that was reported on Friday. Wednesday's update will show data through September 7th. Of those hospitalized, 158 were in the intensive care, 57 in general hospital care. The spring surge saw 202 patients in intensive care, 517. The 2,088 positive results on Tuesday were from 42,727 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 5%. According to John Hunt, test positivity rate over the last 7 days is 6.86. Two things I want to talk about. We'll take a break. When we come on back, there are two things I want to get into. And one is State Fair, now that it's over. And then as well, the real challenge is what we are about to see, and that it's in force today, and that's the schools in session. And my guess is going to be things are going to be really bad. We'll get into both of those issues when we come back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You can watch the show if you so desire. We are streaming this live on Facebook. for reasons. They have not explained that to me. I don't know. But if you would like to watch the monkey dance for you, hello there. You can go and watch me on Facebook at AM 950 Radio and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show as well. 952-946-6205. A total of 123,578 fair growers passed through the Minnesota State Fair's entrance gates on Labor Day, pushing this year's total attendance over to 1.3 million mark. The final day's attendance announced on Tuesday afternoon brought the 2021 tally to 1,301,584. One-third of that number came over the final fair's final 3 days in operation. Attendance at the 2021 fair was down about 35.8% compared to the average total attendance from 2016 to 2019, the 2020 fair canceled. There's a look at the attendance over, well, basically here it is. In 2019, the last non-pandemic year, 2,126,551 went through the gates. This year, 1,301,584. This year's attendance was the lowest posted by the state fair since 1977. Given the issues we faced, attendance was perfect this year, said Fair General Manager Jerry Hammer in a news release. Imagine what it would have been like if you guys had face mask mandates out there. Just going to say. Those issues included severe rainstorms hampering. Well, they always have rain out there. It was the pandemic, and that was a big part of it. Labor shortage, supply chain issues. Organizers were criticized in some quarters when they decided to go ahead with their fair without enacting a COVID vaccine negative requirement for attendance or an indoor mask requirement. I think the COVID requirement would have been hard to put forward, but an indoor mask requirement wouldn't have. And so, there you go. And I want to make sure I say this because I am very concerned. It's 1,300,000 people. All it would take is on one of those days that they had the fair, someone sick as a dog coming in through the gates, not wearing a mask. God forbid it's one of the rain days when everyone ran into one of the buildings and hunkered down there as the storms came through. A person is sitting there sick as a dog, might not even know it, could have COVID and they not even know it. Could be coughing, could just be walking through. And someone has told me, the conservative came after me a little bit this weekend and he said, you know, what are you going to do if it doesn't end up being a massive coronavirus surge after the state fair? And I said, without missing a beat, I'd celebrate. Trust me, I have no problem being wrong on this. If I'm wrong, great. Because if I'm wrong, thousands of people aren't sick. Hundreds of people aren't going to die. Okay. Gosh, I guess I'll be better next time. But you see, as I follow a thing called science, and you do too. It's just that you like to act like you're better than science when science is not convenient. You got a cell phone? Science. Okay, I'm just going to let you know. You got a car? Science. Okay, I'm just going to let you know. What are you having for dinner tonight? Going to bet science was involved in that too. And God forbid, sick or get into a car accident that isn't COVID and you go to the hospital? Science, that whole thing. Everything there is science. I'm not ignorant enough to just sit and pick and choose what goes along with the narrative I want to be true. I actually take science at its word. And science said face mask mandates, and if they could put a vaccine requirement in, that'd be good. I don't think that there was a way you could possibly do that. But needless to say, I would love to be wrong. If I'm wrong, please, conservatives, call me up. Said, told you so, Matt. Not a big deal. I said, yeah, you're right. Thank God. We did not have a super spreader event in Falcon Heights. Thank God. But the problem is that I'm going to guess we're gonna have problems. And here's the thing is, whereas I am more than willing to accept my wrongness, I am more than willing to say, you know what, boy, was I wrong. You guys won't. Because if it goes the other way, and all you people going, namby-pamby cowards afraid of going outside, if things get bad, all of a sudden, I understand people should go to the fair. Why are you expecting me to stand up to the comments I made? Why? It's like the whole thing. It's like there is this whole thing, this article that was out this weekend. I think it was the Washington Post. They're talking about don't mock these people that are dying. I don't agree with mocking. I feel sorry for you. I really do. But I'm also going to say I'm not going to sit here and get angrier at people who, you know, have spent the last 8 months hearing about how vaccines don't work and face masks are part of the commie plot to take over America. And you need to ingest horse dewormer in to stay safe. And who wants to put a light bulb up your caboose and bleach, more bleach? I've heard you guys. You guys have been belligerent, okay? Let's just call it what it is. You've been belligerent fools. And much like last fall, running around with your flag smug as all get-go saying, F your feelings, Trump! You've finally gotten a lot of people pretty pissed off at you, pretty mad at you. So whereas I don't want you sick. I have been consistent since the beginning of this whole thing. I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. But what I don't want is, I'm not going to sit here and say that you are absolved from any criticism or absolved from any people who might not be, you know, in the same boat as I am. You want it both ways. And the reality is, if this doesn't tell you everything about these people that are denying vaccines and face masks, they know. They know. And so when that loved one is in the emergency room, they're out there saying, don't you dare. Don't you dare! The reason why they're saying that is because they know. And it's at that point, the evidence is so overwhelming them, they're on the verge of bursting. Boom. If that's, it's sad that that's what it takes for you people to come around to it. But if that gets you to get vaccinated, watching a loved one die, well, that is the smallest glimmer of good that can come out of that. But realize, no, I'm not going to sit here and absolve these people of months of belligerent jackassery that we have not seen in this country in a long time. Probably not since the Salem witch trials. I'm dead serious, too. I mean, there is some belligerent morons out there that are looking for witches to burn. But the reality is that that's on you. If they're getting upset, that tells you far more about them and that they're running out of ways they can defend their ignorance. And I'm not here to make someone be able to defend their ignorance. And so if you're basically screaming at everyone, shut up so they can still live in their ignorant world. You're just meanies. No, that's not about us. That's about them. End of story on that. The one thing I will say, too, though, is now the state fair is over. The schools are going to be a nightmare. I mean, we've already, Albert Lee is up to 64 kids sick? 64? In Albert Lee. There are plenty of school districts in rural Minnesota where the conservatives have basically said, ain't no way you're going to put a face mask mandate on my school. And now all of a sudden, they're like that family in Jaws that gets told by the mayor to go into the water. And they're sitting and looking around like, I hope the shark doesn't bite us. That's what they're like now. They've gotten their way and they know they're basically risking their own children and their own family's lives and the teacher's lives. But they're still wandering into the water. That's what's going to happen. And I guarantee you by the end of this week, we are going to have multiple school districts with major outbreaks in this state. And major might be a term we have to adjust comparatively to the size of the school district. But yeah, I honestly see that. I honestly see that. I mean, it's one of the reasons why they're having such hard times finding bus drivers is because these kids get on the bus and they don't want to wear the masks. And you can pay me a lot of money. I'm not going to go into and lick a Petri dish on a school bus, for goodness sakes. I can understand why people are not wanting to take those jobs. Nope, this is going to get really bad real fast because of conservative policies of personal responsibility. And once again, when we get there and the personal responsibility avenue has failed us spectacularly, those people will not say a damn thing. But here's the thing I'll make sure, you conservatives, you can hear this right now. I guarantee you this, if I'm wrong, if people live, if people aren't sick, if people aren't bankrupt for the rest of their lives, I'll gladly accept any kind of mockery about it. He was trying to scare people. That happens. Fine. I was overcautious. I'll take that. I will take that heat. But here's me not holding my breath. I will have to say a damn thing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, God, the Lazaro thing is getting worse and worse for the Republicans. We'll get to that. So that story is just 1,000 pounds of ugly. Dear Lord, is that an ugly story. We'll get to that here in a second because there's been breaking news on Lazaro. You know, Jennifer Carnahan's buddy. We'll talk about that in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946. Minnesota GOP donor Anton Lazaro. Now, I want to be careful here because I want to go with Lou LaGoose over at Care 11. He actually described Lazaro correctly. Anton Lazaro case, the former Minnesota GOP strategist and donor who's charged with sex trafficking. The media is changing what he really was dramatically. There are a lot of stories that only refer to him now as a donor to the Minnesota GOP. Oh, no. He was a strategist. He was making a lot of decisions. He, you know, alleged was the campaign manager for the guy that ran a Minnesota 5. I mean, he was deeply involved in the operations of the Minnesota GOP with Jennifer Carnahan, Lazaro's buddy. And yeah, so I want to be very careful here because the media seems to be trying to give, because I guarantee you, if this was a DFL guy, if this guy was attached to the DFL, they would be listing everything that he'd ever done in every single story. Because that's how they do it. Here, it's like, well, he was just some guy that just sort of wandered by someday, and he was looking for directions, and they say goodbye. So, you know, I don't know if you really can attach the GOP, Minnesota GOP, to this. No, you can, because he was clearly deeply involved in the operations of the Minnesota GOP while Jennifer Carnahan was there. I mean, you don't go, I mean, him, the other buddies, they were down in, what, Georgia? Doing the recount, he wouldn't be part of that team if they weren't part of that whole thing. No. There was a lot of stuff going on there that Lazaro seemed to be very much involved in. And by design, very much so by design. So I want to, you know, it is important, I think, to make sure that we really keep that in mind. We do keep that in mind. That being said, Minnesota GOP donor Anton Lazaro used his wealth and political connections to coerce a 16-year-old girl into sex and then attempt to pay her family for their silence, according to allegations in a new lawsuit filed on Tuesday. Jeff Anderson, a St. Paul-based attorney well known for suing the Catholic Church for child abuse, announced the lawsuit in a news conference calling 30-year-old Lazaro an audacious predator who served as a ringmaster of the sex trafficking enterprise. The girl posted allegations about Lazaro on social media in July of 2020, and Lazaro proposed paying her and her parents $1,000 in hush money, a sign of the non-disclosure agreement. If they signed a non-disclosure agreement, according to the lawsuit. Instead, the family reached out to Anderson's firm, which helped them report the behavior to law enforcement, said Anderson. And good for you. I want to give Anderson and this crew. If that's what happened. They came to you, said, and you're like, okay, we need to actually report this. This is a crime. Then good on you, Anderson. Nicely done. You did the right thing. Did the right thing there. Well done. Lazaro is currently being held in jail while facing a 10-count federal indictment alleging he paid underage girls, some as young as 15, for sex in cash and groomed them with presents such as Prada purses, alcohol, vape pens, and cell phones. Anderson praised the Minnesota U.S. Attorney's Office for investigating and charging Lazaro and asked many other victims to come forward in law enforcement. I posted this story, and I want to be very careful. I put a link to it this weekend on Twitter. Someone had done an extensive research. Reminder, this guy had his own porn channel on Pornhub. A lot of stuff is down, but stuff doesn't disappear. And this person tracked down Lazaro's films. Oof. I want to be very careful. Do not go, if this is stuff that upsets you, do not go see this stuff. Don't go look for that story. But I will be very honest, and it's a Twitter thread by the woman that broke the original story about Lazaro. But this guy was a horrible human being, just a horrible human being. And it should be noted, as the GOP screams about, sex trafficking and all that stuff going on, a lot of that seems to be coming from the GOP. Just saying. You might want to clean up your own house before you start screaming about Comet Pizza's basement. They're having blood sacrifices at the altar in the non-existent basement down there. I'm just saying you might just check around you guys on the Republican side. Anderson praised the Minnesota U.S. Attorney's Office for investigating and charging Lazaro and asked any other victims to come forward to law enforcement. The lawsuit describes Lazaro as a politically connected and wealthy adult. And it should be, by the way, it should be mentioned, if they have a non-disclosure, I want to speak to any potential victims out there. If you had a non-disclosure agreement with Lazaro and this other woman who are now seeking charges against them, Giselle, whatever, I'll get to her in a second. If you've got a non-disclosure agreement and you think that that's still got any weight whatsoever, it doesn't. Just dump that and call the U.S. Attorney's Office and get in touch with them and talk to them about what happened, okay? By all means. The lawsuit describes Lazaro as a politically connected and wealthy adult, citing his public friendship with Jennifer Carnahan, who resigned from her post as the GOP chairwoman after charges against Lazaro went public. Once again, Jennifer Carnahan's buddy. Mm-hmm. Lazaro often flaunted his wealth and high-power political connections to the public and on social media. The complaint states, for example, Lazaro posted pictures of himself carrying tens of thousands of dollars in cash, sitting atop a private jet and driving his Ferrari. And clearly, I think these are staged photos now because – and by the way, isn't that the standard Republican thing is wealth and money are the most – only thing you should gauge any kind of success and decency with. He's got bundles of cash and he sits on a private jet, then he's better than the rest of us. That is, it is so easy to manipulate the Republican Party. Dear God, if you're the Republican Party, this should scare you to death, because this is like this is just an expose on how easy it is for an individual to manipulate you guys, because the only thing you see is you see stacks of cash and he makes donations and he's got a jet and a Ferrari. Well, he's Republican material. You don't even ask the question of where did he get his money? What's he doing? Dear Lord. It is this on social media. The complaint states, Lazaro's image could be found online next to several noteworthy politicians, political figures, and prominent members of the media. Using his power, Lazaro allegedly recruited 19-year-old Gisela Medina, since ousted as chair of the University of St. Thomas College Republicans, to find underage girls and solicit them for his perverse and predatory pleasure in exchange for money and gifts, according to Anderson. Medina is charged as Lazaro's co-conspirator in the criminal case. After the teenager posted alleged allegations about Lazaro on social media, two St. Paul-based lawyers acting on behalf of Lazaro tried to silence the victim and his family, though money and threats of a lawsuit for defamation, said Anderson. The proposed non-disclosure agreement admits Mr. Lazaro and the teenager had a consensual interaction in the recent past, he said. Lazaro's behavior inflicted psychological trauma on the unnamed teen and the family. They'll continue to incur expenses in medical for psychological treatment, therapy, and counseling. Tony Lozano, and Gisela Medina, they stole her freedom for profit, said Stacey Benson, another attorney for Anderson's firm, and hopefully through this process she can get and recover the power and control she was stolen from her as a child. I want to make sure we can't lose focus of one element of this story, which definitely seems to be kind of either overlooked or missing. Where the hell did Lazaro get his money from? They say he has a lot of money, but it's not clear of, did he inherit it? Was he some sort of guy that created something and sold it and made a ton of money younger? Did he build like a website or something like that in college and he sold it and he made a ton of money off that? I mean, there was an allegation or kind of an implication of an allegation. Maybe that's the best way to say it. An implication of an allegation that he had somehow was going to the Ukraine and getting money over there. And that was, I believe it was Carnahan made that comment at one point that, you know, that where he's getting money from. Because there's that little element that's dangling out there, too. Say I am a foreign country. Say I've got a guy that I've got a Republican chair of the Republican Party who seems to be easily swayed if you write big checks to politicians she likes. If you're out there and you it makes it look like you're the big wheeler dealer. And so you load some piece of human trash up with a bunch of cash, send them over to the United States, get them involved in state politics, and let's face it, Jennifer Carnahan and Lazaro were buddies. They were buddies and pals. And they sat there and you know, Lazaro was very much in the operations of the Minnesota GOP. It's that simple. And so the question of where that money came from is a very legitimate question. And, you know, there are really two hurts here for the Republican Party. Number one is that he was selling the underage porn to various people, and I didn't think you could make a lot of money off that, but maybe that's what he made his money off of was you know, he was a porn king, and he was selling underage porn videos, and he was making a ton of money off that. Which once again, that means all that money and the fact that he was involved in the Republican Party so closely is, you know, just absolute, you know, a mess for the Republicans. Or did the money come from some foreign outlet and they set him up to be the insider? And you saw how quickly Republicans got in line with that. Should be reminded, when this story broke, remember both Michael Broadcorp helping bring, I'm looking at his Twitter feed, I got something from there in a second, but Hagedorn, her husband, Jennifer Carnahan's husband, and herself were first seemed to be far more concerned about the, hey, let's make sure he gets his day in court. Let's make sure that, let's not jump to conclusions on that. I mean, wow. Not only is Lou Ragus, the point bringing up that he's, that the fact that she's part of the Minnesota GOP, Lazaro was part of the Minnesota GOP establishment. The father never signed the non-disclosure agreement. He's got this little gem. He never signed the non-disclosure agreement. When prompted Lazaro to push the non-disparaging agreement, what prompted Lazaro to push the non-disclosure agreement? Apparently the teen was posting about Lazaro on media and social media, on social media sites. Also knew the civil complaint says Medina met Lazaro through the sugar daddy website Seeking Arrangement. And I'm going to read this to you. Upon information and belief, Gisela Medina met Lazaro... Medina met Lazaro through a website called Seeking Arrangement, also known as Seeking, a website described as a dating platform for sugar dating, wherein a sugar daddy and a sugar baby enter into a relationship that offers financial support in exchange for companionship and possibly sex. And she was at St. Thomas, kids. There you go. I imagine, was it a, yeah. Wow. Sometimes you gotta wonder about the world as we're in that, doesn't it? That internet sure has delivered as they promised about making all of our lives better, hasn't it? Oh my God. Lou Ragus also reached out to the law firm North Star Criminal Defense, whose attorneys basically did the non-disclosure agreements. They would not return comment on that. So there is that. But on top of that, let me. In case you're wondering about Jen, Grand Canyon Carnahan, as we like to refer to her. So tell you what, let's take a break. When I do come back, Jennifer Carnahan, I don't think she understands how bad this is for her. Because I don't want to just remind everything. We just discussed what Lazaro was doing. She had made some comments which made it seem like she might have been aware of some of the things Lazaro was doing. And if that is the case, and she didn't put out every alarm, every DEFCON 1 signal that she could to the Minnesota GOP, that's not a good sign that you kept quiet to help cover for this guy. But Jennifer, I think, is a little delusional. I'll get back to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, you know what you won't hear? Any of those religious right people that you know condemning any of this. Just are trying to ignore it. Oh, yes. The same people that were Al Franken for 3 months. All of a sudden, this was like, oh, I don't know why you were trying to story. This is just a minor story. This is no big deal. Dear Lord, Lazaro is just a mess. This whole thing is just so ugly. Less than a month after her ouster as head of the Minnesota Republican Party, Jennifer Carnahan is vowing to return to the political arena. If you are a Republican, and I'm dead serious, I know you guys have no reason to think that I'm actually trying to give you guys any legitimate advice. This is a freaking nightmare for you guys. Maybe, and this is maybe what it is she's just, it is very possible that Jennifer Carnahan is just waiting for some wealthy Minnesotan to scribble out a $1 million check and telling her, never come back to Minnesota politics again. Just walk away. Carnahan, who resigned the party chair last month due to the Anton Lazaro scandal, released a statement on Facebook Sunday addressing her future. She says she's receiving an outpouring of support. Really? Following her fall as Minnesota GOP chair, proclaiming that she is a very small group in her party intended on getting me out of the failed yet again. Yeah, okay. This is a small group that didn't push me out of the party, take my job away from me, nor change people's perception of me because people believe in the truth and what happened was not truthful. Oh, God. Just unbelievable. As a real result, she's received thousands of calls for action to take my leadership in Minnesota to the next level, including running again for chair of the Minnesota GOP on October 2nd. Now, I'm going to say this as the liberal talk show host. Oh, please do. Oh, mwah. That would be a gift that keeps on giving. Oh, such a treat. Please do. I will say this just if I'm being honest with you. If you're the Republicans, find someone to write her a check and get her out of the scene. But that's what she's waiting for. She's thinking to running of governor. Other ideas between, God, if you ran for governor, God, wouldn't that be perfect? Because I can tell you right now, the Lazaro thing is not going away. And every time there is new evidence. I mean, you're going to have this federal trial. Then you're going to have the civil trial. Oh, and that's the first of the civil trials. I can't wait when we find out where his money's from. Where all of a sudden, yeah, it, God forbid it was one of those two worst case scenarios for the Republicans I mentioned earlier. Oh, my God. The post was shared on Twitter by former Republican strategist, one-time deputy chair of the party, Michael Broadcorp. It comes less than a month after Carnahan's exit from party leadership, which at the time she attributed to mob mentality, and she's reflected on an effort to defame, tarnish, and attempt to ruin my personal and professional reputation. Nope. You didn't need any help on that. You did a fantastic job of that on your own. I am confident a full investigation will uncover the facts and prove my innocence. Well, I think you're halfway right on that. You will uncover the facts. I'm not so sure it's going to prove your innocence. She said in a statement, my guess is the investigation they are having has to be cleared before any information gets released to the public, has to be cleared through the Republican Executive Committee. And I guarantee you there'll be enough people when this story comes on out that will be so terrified of the findings of the story that they are going to basically say, just walk away and they'll not release it. The body voted narrowly to award Carnahan a 3-month severance package of $38,000, though she initially sought 8-month severance. Carnahan, who's married to Jim Hagedorn, should resign after the August 12th arrest of Lazaro, a Republican strategist and close political ally of Carnahan's, who is charged with numerous counts of child sex trafficking. The two co-hosted multiple podcasts were pictured together at Minnesota Vikings game. Lazaro, her buddy! Lazaro was involved in Carnahan's effort to become a party chair and was a guest on Carnahan's 2018 wedding. Lazaro has also donated thousands of dollars to Hagedorn's political campaign. Amid all of this, the multiple former staffers went public with stories of sexual harassment and misconduct they endured while working for the party during Carnahan's reign, while former directors described the toxic environment that Carnahan engaged in. Carnahan denied the claims, characterizing the stories as coming from disgruntled individuals. Dude, if everyone you worked with is a disgruntled individual, they're not the problem. You are. You're the jackass. I'm just going to – it's a ratio of numbers. Well, I think they're all just disgruntled employees. Well, every other one of them thinks you're a horrible human being. I'll go with the wide variety of people from all sorts of different backgrounds and places, all basically calling you out, Jennifer. But, yeah, okay, if you are the Republican Party, this is a nightmare for you. Because not only did a clearly deranged, sick pervert get allegedly, he gets his day in court, allegedly. Not only was that guy able to basically infiltrate the Minnesota GOP at the highest levels and corrupt the executive director clearly to at some level. God forbid, can you imagine if one of these victims had actually come to the Minnesota GOP and Carnahan actually covered it up? Not saying that did happen, but can you imagine if this that if that was the case, if we have anything like that? Wow. It's at that point you have to ask the question of whether or not Jennifer Carnahan would go to jail. Probably likely would. This is a nightmare. And like I said, maybe you do find that millionaire that's going to write her a big check and tell her to bon voyage. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. That's a sad story that was getting a lot of coverage here. The body of a 2.5-year-old girl with autism missing in a park in Edina was recovered from the pond earlier this afternoon following a search spanning more than 18 hours. More than 150 fire and law enforcement personnel from Edina and neighboring suburbs were looking in around Roseland Park in hopes of finding Ikhlas Ahmed after a search was conducted through the night in Edina. Fire Chief Andrew Slama. Searchers recovered the girl's body in the pond near the park's aquatic center, said Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, who was also on the scene. I actually went past that park earlier today and there was quite a bit of police activity going on in that park trying to find her. Unfortunately, a very tragic outcome there. All our best to the family and all the personnel out there who've been working this scene for a day. That's a very tough story. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios here at AM 950. Brett Johnson is kind enough to jump in the studio here to talk with us. Hey, Brett.
Hey there, Matt.
So I got to ask you, did you see the story? So this is apparently the second year this has happened. At the end of the state fair. So state fair goes through tomorrow, last night. Here's how I understand it goes. 8 o'clock, you can't get back. You can't. That's the last people, the time people can get in with admission. Okay. 8 o'clock is the last you can get in with admission. 9 o'clock on Labor Day, all the vendors close down. 10 o'clock, the midway shuts down. And that's the end. We're all done. If pandemic aside, if you go to the animal barns, most of them are pretty much empty by the Sunday, really. So you're really kind of starting to see a limited amount of stuff, and a lot of the food booths have. I mean, I don't know if that was such a problem this year, but a lot of the food booths have already burned through a lot of their signature items, and you're only down to one or two things left. But you know, it's winding down. Out on the entrance over on Snelling Avenue in Falcon Heights. Apparently, there was a mob. They actually had to pepper spray these guys mace these guys. I'm not sure what these people are. There's a lot of things that come to mind. But this group of people was furious at 8:04. So they have just shut down admission. You can't get in. 8:04. And they are going ballistic to where they had to shut down the gate and law enforcement had to pepper spray a bunch of irate people trying to get into the Minnesota State Fair. Now, the first thing I think about is I think to myself, okay, we've had some other fairs
where there's been, you know, youth out of control, some unruly kids trying to get in. Well, one of these guys had a gun, which they, I don't know, I'm guessing that person, unless they have a license to carry it, that might be a little bit more of an issue.
And we found from the courts, you can't bring those into the state fair anyways.
Exactly. So that was, you know, is it unruly youth? Is it anti-vaxxers? Is it anti-maskers? Is it the gun guys? There was a guy with a gun. Was it gun guys saying, I'm going to get in there? I don't know. I mean, unruly youth is the first thing that popped in my mind. And then people said to myself, you don't understand. The vendors, to get rid of as much stuff as they can, apparently offer really big discounts on whether that's like a, you know, in some of the larger, like a furnace or something like that. You know, the state fair furnace that's been out there, that's been on display, they need to move it. They're going to give you a deep price. And apparently, someone says the theory they have is that these people tried to get in, tried to argue, well, since the state fair was, the admission was over at 8 o'clock, that they should have been able to get in for free and get in and run through the fair to basically find all these vendor deals and get out. And I don't know if that's true, but the more I think about it, I said, I'm going to guess that actually might have some validity, considering it was right at 8:04. So they just shut down the admission, and all of a sudden all these people are irate because they want a bucket of Pronto Pups and they can't get them.
So you think it's just a bunch of coupon clippers that are outside the door trying to get in, get their cheap food, get their deals?
Well, it's okay. I'll say this. It depends on what you're getting. Let's go. Like, there's the guy that's by the pickle stand that's over by the. In the one market village by where the Sky Ride is. And he's in there, or he used to be. There used to be a guy in there that had swords, all right? Because nothing, I got to go get a sword. And, all right, we don't, yeah, okay. I don't think you could actually take them home with you, but they had display models.
I think there's people walking around with a sword.
Hey, what could possibly go around? Hey, let's go ride the zipper. All right. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I want a bigger discount on those cookies there. Well, my sword says I need a discount.
I was in the sword place at the state fair. This is about 10 years ago. And I was in there, and the swords were like $600, $700.
Oh.
But and so I'm saying to myself, all right, so if this guy's got a sword and he doesn't want to haul the thing back to his car on the Sunday night, and you offer, say, $200 cash, and it walks, and it's got fingerprints and, you know, spilled ice cream all over it anyway, do you let the sword go? I don't know. Or the water guys. I mean, every water softener place has got someone out there. So you got a water softener. Those things are pricey, filled with candy and, you know, dripped ice cream and people pawing on it, smacking it, probably dented up. You know, if a water softener is, what, $2,000 or $1,000 not installed, $1,000 not installed, and someone offers you $500 cash for it, maybe this is why all those people were protesting at that, or trying to force their way in the gate.
This gives me an idea for the state fair. Maybe the Tuesday after Labor Day, they should just have like a clearance fair. Or a clearance sale on the state fairgrounds.
Well, if they're already rioting without that, I don't know if we need to throw more meat to the piranhas, if you want to. I don't know if that's the best idea. Because then the question will be is, how do you, you know, who gets in there first? And, of course, you know someone's going to, the fists are going to be flying. Last night, apparently, there was also a fist fight. This is not a police blotter. You do see that often. Apparently, men throwing punches at the corn dog stand in the Midway. I think people have had, it was the last day of the fair. You know, tempers were short. I'm only imagining right before the haymaker started to fly, someone said, "No, I said mustard." You know, and that was the end of that.
I hope they got a security camera footage of that. That'd be entertaining.
There are 5,000 phones, and why have I not seen the fist fight at the corn dog stand at the Midway yet? Please, I want to see this. I actually, my daughter had gone over there yesterday afternoon after we talked for extensively about mask wearing and where she's going to be and being careful. And I texted her and said, you're not in a fist fight over at the corn dog stand in the Midway, are you? No. And, of course, my daughter has got a pretty sly person. She goes, no, I'm having a fist fight over by the horticulture building. I'm like, oh, okay, well.
There
you go. Okay, well, nothing to worry about for this father. Proud parent indeed. That's the end of the fair, man. I went a third less people. Not since 1977. That was the last time that few people went to the state fair.
And now the question is it going to rebound in 22, or are we going to have a repeat of 21?
If we can get the pandemic under control, you know, regardless of idiots that don't want to get vaccinated or masked, and I call you what you are, okay? You're dumb. You trust the science on this. I'm tired of pulling punches. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. So put on a damn mask and get vaccinated. But it depends on when they come around. And if they start coming around and they're realizing, hey, I've lost three family members. Maybe I should get vaccinated. If that finally happens, maybe we will actually have a normal one. And if they do have a normal one next year, it'll be packed. Packed to the gills. Absolutely.
Oh, it'll be record-setting attendance.
Oh, I think it would be. I think it would be. Especially if this is really kind of, we can finally get this past us, but we'll have to see. My gut feeling is that, you know, and I'll be blunt, when you look at what's going on in these Republican states like Texas and Florida, where they almost seem to be trying to make this as bad as possible. Is that what the goal is? Just to try to make this as bad as possible, as long as possible, so they can have wins against Democrats in the next election cycle, even though they themselves are the ones that did it. So you were Democrat, Joe Biden, Democrats are bad, even though I basically, you know, fed up the kids to the coronavirus. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see. Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer usually joins us here on Tuesday. What are we talking about today?
Well, no surprise. The main story we'll be talking about is, of course, the great reporting Dina Winter did with that Jaleel Stallings story. So we'll talk mainly about that. And then we'll also go a little bit into leadership changes with the Dems and the Republicans and the state Senate, and touch a little bit on what's happening with that ballot question on the police amendment, because there's a chance it might not happen due to a court order today.
Well, there's an update on that. I'll try to get to that this interview on this. Still shocked Star Tribune hasn't covered the Stallings story. We'll get to that. Here it is. Patrick Cooligan joining Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back with you here on a Tuesday afternoon, even though it doesn't really feel like a Tuesday, being it is the day after Labor Day. But indeed, it does mean we have Patrick Cooligan joining us for our usual Tuesday visit. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, great resource for Minnesota news and politics over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, thanks for coming back on the show today.
Always good to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off with a big story that you guys broke last week. This would be Dina Winter writing in the Minnesota Reformer, and something we covered extensively on the Matt McNeil show last week, and that is this story about Jaleel Stallings. This is an African-American man who was basically standing guard at a gas station during last year's riots in the wake of the George Floyd murder. And basically what happened is that an unmarked Minneapolis police van pulled up and unannounced started firing at him. And with that said, Stallings returned fire. He was, of course, charged, but ultimately a jury acquitted him of any wrongdoing. Now, Patrick, we won't get into all of the details, but encourage everyone, if you haven't already, to read through this full report at MinnesotaReformer.com. But just an absolutely unbelievable story about the fact that this guy was basically shot at from an unmarked van with no police lights on, police not announcing their presence. That would be a very scary situation for me if I were out there. All of a sudden, someone just shows up and starts firing on me from an unmarked van.
Right. There's a few important details I want to just add to that. As you say, an unmarked van, Mr. Stallings, he did fire back, but you can kind of understand why, given that they did not announce themselves. It was not clear that they were police. They're, as you say, in an unmarked van. He's permitted to carry the pistol that he had. He's an Army veteran. He's got no criminal record. And no less than the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, had warned Minnesotans that there were white supremacists roaming around looking for trouble. And so that's kind of the context there. Then after he fires back, and he says he deliberately didn't try to actually hit anyone. He was just trying to scare them off. They unload out of this van. They say he shot fired, and he immediately, and you can see this on video, he dropped his weapon and he's lying down, face down on the ground, and the police run over their SWAT officers, but you can't really tell because all the tack gear they're wearing is above, over their their blue Minneapolis Police shirts. They run over, and they spent 30 seconds pummeling him to the point where he had a fractured eye socket, had to go to the hospital. He was originally not responsive to paramedics, and which the paramedics completely falsely attributed to probable narcotic use, not true. And so they beat him up pretty good. They charged him, and they sent out press releases, and as did the county attorney. It was just, you know, sort of like attempted cop killing, and it was just totally bogus. And a judge agreed with Mr. Stallings that he should be able to present a self defense defense at trial. He did, and he was acquitted of all eight charges. And now the city is going to get sued again for this malfeasance on the part of police officers. And it just raises all kinds of questions about what exactly they thought they were trying to accomplish by riding around an unmarked van and shooting the less lethal projectiles at people without warning. And for what reason, we don't know. And there's all kinds of extremely damning video and audio, and we obtained some of the video. We had transcripts of the rest of it, and there was really it just seemed like a real cowboy culture that was pervasive, at least on that night, 5 days after the murder of George Floyd.
And just continuing with some of the appears to be, well, I think it's very much police misconduct. We have recordings of Sergeant Andrew Bittle giving his order saying, drive down. This is just before they shot at Stallings. Drive down Lake Street. You see a group, call it out. Okay, great. Blank them up. Gas them up. Blank them up. He also turned to his SWAT unit in the van and said, all right, we're rolling down Lake Street. The first blankers we see, we're hammering them with 40s. We have this on body cam.
It's important to note that when they say 40s, these are these less lethal projectile weapons that they were using. So they're not actually firing lethal rounds at people. But it doesn't really, in this case, and this shows the danger of that approach. Because obviously somebody's going to feel like they're getting shot at, and they're going to shoot back.
Are there... As far as I know, these officers still sound like they're employed with the Minneapolis Police Department. Is that status, do we know if that status could change or if they're going to face any disciplinary action from what happened?
The chief of police gave a kind of mealy-mouthed statement about how it was important to note the context of what was going on, that there had been the rioting and the looting and the arson, and that peaceful protests could quickly escalate into violence, and that was the atmosphere, the context that the officers were working in, which sounded to me like a defense of the officers. He then added that the investigative process is ongoing. The mayor made a stronger statement that the behavior that was witnessed was I can't remember the exact words, but he condemned the behavior, and he said, there's things I can't say because of state law regarding discipline of public workers, but the investigation is on. So you got the sense that there's an investigation. But what we know also from the reformers reporting, if you remember last year, in a piece we wrote called "Bad Cops," it takes more than 500 days to resolve complaints, and far too often officers who have committed really egregious acts of bad police misconduct have not been disciplined at all, or have been given a very light discipline. After they often they appeal to arbitrators, who very often will reduce whatever discipline that was imposed by various chiefs of police going back decades.
want to talk a little bit more about the legal aspect, because Hennepin County, Mike Freeman, has certainly been under a lot of pressure for the last year plus, and the fact that, well, his office did end up charging Jaleel Stallings, despite what we know from your reporting in the Reformer. I imagine he's got to be facing some pressure, too. Have we heard any fallout from Freeman's office yet on what happened with this case and now with your reporting at the Reformer?
They declined to comment in the most condescending way you can imagine. And Freeman, I think it's just a coincidence, but as it happened, the day that our story was published, he told the Star Tribune he's not running again. And honestly, I think he'd be in serious trouble in a re-election effort, given what we've come to know about his performance. In this case alone ought to be career-ending.
Absolutely. Well, want to definitely say thanks for doing the reporting, and especially, obviously, Dina Winter, who is the main reporter on that, because uncovering this story in the context of what happened is so important, because if you were just to read a few lines about what happened in the news, you would say, all right, well, this guy, Jaleel Stallings, shot at police. Somehow he got left off, and there's so much detail that could be left out in a short news report, and you guys did a great job digging a lot deeper and figuring out what really happened, especially reviewing this body camera footage. It definitely changed the entire context of this incident, of what happened with Jaleel Stallings and the Minneapolis police last year.
Thanks, Brett. That's what we're trying to do every day. We can't quite do it to this level, but I think that was that story was a success for us and hopefully for the community.
Yeah, absolutely, and hope it gets more recognition as well. Kind of staying on the same topic here with the Minneapolis Police Department, want to move on to something that Rylan Eichens wrote just a little while ago today, and this could have a major impact on Minneapolis residents who soon could be voting on a change to the Charter Amendment, which could significantly change the way law enforcement is conducted in Minneapolis. Basically, what happened is Rylan reports a judge has thrown out language for the Minneapolis public safety ballot question that was set to appear for voters on the November ballot, calling it vague, ambitious, and incapable of implementation, as well as unreasonable. So this really turns things into major chaos when it comes to this ballot question, especially as I understand it that, well, these ballots need to be printed very soon, being that November is coming up quicker than we think, and of course there's still early voting that needs to take place as well.
Right. The balloting begins on September 17th, and I think that we're under the impression that they really need to finalize the language today if they were to get the ballots out with the right language. But obviously there's going to be another round of litigation. So certainly, as you say, it throws us into some chaos, and I would expect it to continue to be through Election Day. What's interesting is that the ballot initiative itself, despite being put forward by some folks who have at least a year ago had some fairly radical ideas about the future of policing that were encapsulated by their slogan "Defund or Abolish Police." That's not what the ballot initiative does, and I'm not really sure that it's quite as earth-shattering as either the opponents or the advocates for it believe, but it's become this kind of important proxy battle in the city and really nationally for the future of police.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have to see what ends up happening with that. But I don't know if you know this, but I mean, if this thing ends up getting tied up in the courts over the next few weeks, could we potentially reach a point where maybe this question doesn't even make it onto the ballot simply because, well, we don't know what to even put on the ballot? I wonder if we could even reach that point in the next few weeks or so.
Yeah, I'm not even sure on what the next step would be in litigation if there's another lawsuit based on whatever new language they come up with, and a judge strikes that language down. I don't know what the end game is, because if they're going to have to print these ballots, and you have a question on the ballot that a judge says is invalid, I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, final topic. Let's talk about what's happening at the state legislature and something that I don't think has happened very often, if at all, over at the state capitol, and that is in the state senate, where we're going to have the leaders of both parties stepping down very soon. Paul Gazelka is going to be stepping down as the Senate Majority Leader. He, of course, is a Republican, being that he is very likely to run for governor, while Susan Kent has run into controversy of her own over handling of sexual harassment claims by staffers within the DFL. So she will be stepping down as the Senate Minority Leader. Quite a bit of chaos, maybe not chaos, but definitely some moving parts at the state capitol right now, with both Gazelka and Susan Kent leaving their leadership positions. And it's interesting to see who could potentially fill that leadership vacuum, since now you have two open positions for both parties.
You're right. That is a unique situation, at least in my time here. It's never happened where you have Senate leadership of both parties out. You did forget to mention that there was a reformer story that they created problems for Susan Kent. That's okay. But in any case, she announced she's resigning. She says that the pandemic has taken a toll on her and her family. Gazelka is considering a run for governor, as you noted. And so there's a leadership battle on both sides. Right now, it looks like on the DFL side, it's Melissa Franzen, who is an Edina senator. She came from Target. And I think she's a pretty shrewd operator. She's from the Metro. She can raise money. And then Nick Frentz is a Mankato senator. I think he's probably going to he's gathering up some of the older white members of the of the caucus. It should be interesting, you know, with 14 months before the election, and they're close to the majority, but it's going to be a tough election. On the Republican side, they haven't had a leadership fight since 2017. And apparently Tom Bach, the former Democratic leader, who now caucuses with the Republicans, is whipping votes hard. So that would be an interesting outcome. And then Jeremy Miller, who's the current president of the Senate, he's thought of as a kind of a consensus builder, well-liked in the caucus, family business. I believe that in greater Minnesota. But there was some question about whether he's got three young children, some question about whether or not he would even run for Senate again. But with this opportunity having arisen, he may be in the hunt.
Well, and just going back to your point about Tom Bach, we do have one person who has been in a leadership position in the state Senate. And as you said, that is Tom Bach, who is a former Democrat that is now an independent now. And yeah, he's got kind of in the middle right now, because if I imagine if he had stayed with the DFL party, I don't know if he would have had a very good chance, but I think he certainly would have had a chance to maybe reclaim that leadership post. And now he's possibly looking at being the Republican leader. And I kind of wonder, are there enough Republicans that might support him, being that he is a former DFL or so? He might have unintentionally kind of put himself in the middle, where he's probably not going to be, or he could very well possibly not be the leader of either party, even though he is the only guy in the Senate that does have that leadership experience.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing I'd say about Tom Bach, having got to know him a little bit since I got here in 2014. He's always in the middle of every conversation at the Minnesota legislature, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, he'll probably find his own way, although redistricting could make things a little challenging for him in 2022, but that's a bridge we'll be crossing at a later time. We've been speaking with Patrick Houlihan of the Minnesota Reformer, editor-in-chief, website minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. And if you haven't had a chance to read through the story on Jaleel Stallings, I'd encourage you to do so over at minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today.
Good to be here, Brett.
And let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950. 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, Rocky Mountain Mike listening in today. Nice to have you here, my friend. Haven't talked to him in a while, but of course, obviously, we've been a little bit preoccupied with the pandemic. Thanks for tuning on in. You can, of course, listen nationwide on the TuneIn app. We podcasted on SoundCloud, on iTunes. You can follow me there. You can watch the show on Facebook. It's Radio for Your Eyes. It's all sorts of things. Yes, come watch the Grunt Fest. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I'm going to have to read this one because this one is a breaking news story. This is kind of one of those things because of the nature of it. The deadline for the ballot questions in Minneapolis for the election coming up here in November is today. A wrench, to say the least, was thrown into the works. A judge threw out the language for the Minneapolis public safety ballot question that was set to appear before voters in the November election, calling it vague, ambitious, and incapable of implementation, as well as unreasonable. It's interesting. Now they're saying it's not enough information. The last time they threw this out, they said it was too much information. All right. We'll see if it goes through now, because Minneapolis officials on Tuesday did approve new ballot language for a proposed way for the city officials to replace the Minneapolis Police Department, a change made hours after a judge struck down the earlier version of the question. The council approved the new wording in an emergency meeting Tuesday afternoon, and Mayor Jacob Frey then cleared the measure to head to the November ballot without a signature, saying the language is more transparent. It was wrong when the council tried to hide the ball and prevent voters from knowing what they were voting on, said Frey, who was opposed. By the way, I'm going to get back to you, Mayor Frey, in just a second here. I don't know if you're I don't know if you really understand how most people are going to look at this ballot question. I'll get to that in a second. It would also be wrong for me to prevent language for the ballot question from ultimately going on the ballot that has met all the legal requirements. Tuesday marked a dramatic day in the month-long fight on how to present the question to voters and the issue that has become a focal point of the November elections, the first municipal races since George Floyd was killed by the police officer at 38th in Chicago. The legal and political fights do not impact what the proposal does, only how it appears to voters on the ballot. And so this is the, you know, the big question. They've been going back and forth on how to present this. I don't quite know how I'm looking at this, that ballot question is going to go. I got to tell you, most of me feels it's going to be a slam dunk, that it's going to be a 70 to 30% vote to replace the Minneapolis Police Department. And I'll get back to the Minneapolis Police and some of the levels of problems that they have here in just a second. But I really don't know if this is necessarily – I mean, I think Frey is definitely – missing it. Now, here's the latest language that they approve for the ballot. Department of Public Safety. Shall the Minneapolis City Charter be amended to remove the police department and replace it with public safety that employs a comprehensive public health approach to the delivery of functions by the Department of Public Safety, with those specific functions to be determined by the mayor and city council by ordinance, which will not be subject to exclusive mayoral power over its establishment, maintenance, and command, and which could include licensed police officers, if necessary, to fulfill its responsibilities for public safety, with the general nature of the amendments being briefly indicated in the explanatory note below, which is made part of the ballot. Explanatory note. Let me read this. This amendment would create the Department of Public Safety, combining public safety functions throughout the comprehensive public health approach to be determined by the mayor and council. The department would be led by a commissioner nominated by the mayor and appointed by the council. The police department and its chief would be removed from the city charter. The public safety department could include police officers, but the minimum funding requirements would be eliminated. So that's the explanatory note. It's a lot there. I don't know if you guys understand how much people read. They're going to get to this. Shall the Minneapolis City Charter be amended to remove the police department and replace it with the Department of Public Safety? And done. They're not going to read the rest of this question. I mean, it's going to be like the back of a ballot that's got a bunch of judges on there. Yeah, okay, incumbent. That's what most people do. When you read this, the people, they don't care about the nuance. The polarizing element here is the Minneapolis Police Department. And the Minneapolis Police Department, with the Stallings case, which we just heard from Patrick Cooligan over at the Reformer, once again, in the days after George Floyd, so you would say to yourself, if at any point this Minneapolis Police Department was going to show some level of understanding how far they'd crossed the line. It was as the city was burning with furious citizens angry at the police for the treatment of African Americans, all minorities, and all of its citizens. They would be on best behavior. Instead, they send out a gangland-style hit squad in an unmarked police van that unannounced opens fire on Stallings, who then returns fire. Then they get out of the van and beat him senseless after he clearly surrendered when he realized it was police that were firing at him. You have two officers in the original court date in December making the comment about, oh yeah, the police like to target civilians. What? What? On top of that, you got a lieutenant who's out there seeming to be so upset because the white supremacists are getting a bad rap by the governor and the mayor that he basically is saying, making implication that you should just arrest a bunch of people regardless of whether or not they need to be arrested to take some of the heat off the white supremacists. Because the Lord knows, you know, it's tough keeping those white sheets clean. They got a lot of stress on their lives. No, I mean, I don't. And on top of it, two more points on top of it. They still prosecuted Stallings. They all knew he was innocent. They had the body camera footage, which showed he was innocent, showed the officers had been lying, showed the incredible disrespect for the citizens of Minneapolis. They had evidence as police officers that the guy hadn't done anything wrong. And they still persecuted him and prosecuted him to where the jury found him not guilty. Even the judge called out the behavior of some of the police, saying, yeah, you guys don't seem right. And on top of it, we all know the truth. This happened a year and 3 months ago. They were never going to investigate this until it became public. They had evidence. The Minneapolis Police Department had evidence of their own officers wrongly targeting civilians, opening fire on innocent people, beating a man senseless in the street under this cloud of thuggery that they encapsulated themselves in the days after George Floyd, which seems to me only to be saying is like, you're mad at how we treated George Floyd. Well, we'll show you how we're going to treat you. Authoritarian fascist military police that were looking for blood. And they had the evidence of this. And at no point does it seem like there was any disciplinary action even initiated in any of these cases. The city of Minneapolis is tired of your crap, Minneapolis police. They're tired of it. You're destroying evidence that the second precinct is the third precinct is burning down, and no one seems to be able to understand who ordered it, why they did it, and what all was destroyed. But it seems to be just a massive ramshackle of destruction to basically hide something. Clearly, I don't think anyone here is thinking that you guys, I mean, until Andy Mannix at the Star Tribune released that story, no one was talking about it until we found out about it and like, oh, nothing there. Now you got the State Patrol, who's deleted all of their emails and texts around this time, that you know, once again, puts into question whether or not that there's a massive cover-up. I mean, this is the Axios story. Minnesota State Patrol officers deleted text emails following last summer's protests over the murder of George Floyd, according to court published this week. The purge makes it nearly impossible to track the behavior of the State Patrol officers, according to the Minnesota chapter of the ACLU, which is suing the department on behalf of journalists who say they were targeted and harassed during the protest, which they were. That was one thing I was talking about multiple nights. I was like, why is all the cops shooting at the journalists? They didn't seem well, because they basically were going to put you back in line one way or the other. They were the abusive husband, and the city of Minneapolis was the person that they were abusing. And they were going to make sure you got back in line and get me a cold beer, or I'll give you another one for the other cheek. Major Joseph Dwyer admitted during a July hearing that the vast majority of officers permanently deleted their emails and texts. Dwyer said that the agency's standard practice over the course of time that we remove, you know, delete text messages, delete emails. The officer said that the manual purge of tests was emails was not ordered by superiors. Dwyer said that no one reviewed whether the information found in the texts and emails was relevant to ongoing litigation, adding other records were retained. Any technical plan or anything as far as rosters or pertinent information relevant to the events would be kept in those files or files. As far as generic or benign emails between one another members, those are the items that's deleted. That's what Dwyer's saying. Accidental, automated, or routine, the ACLU of Minnesota said after the release of the documents. The purge did not happen because of file destruction or retention policy. No one reviewed the purge communications before they're deleted and determined whether the materials were relevant. This destruction of public records makes it nearly impossible to track the State Patrol's behavior. It should be mentioned, the State Patrol is required to make and keep records of official activity, including text messages and emails, per Minnesota data law, says Don Gemberling, a spokesman for the nonprofit Minnesota Coalition of Government Information. They can only delete them under a schedule approved by State Records Retention Panel. Stagger Tribune asked Gordon at the State Patrol for his schedule policy. He did not provide one. So basically what we have is we have rules in place, but there doesn't seem to be anyone enforcing these rules. And by the way, don't fool yourself. This is how the Minnesota Republican Party set this up. They like to scream, oh, we're going to have accountability, but then they make it to where no one's actually following up to see if there's these people are doing what they're saying. And now we have to take the State Patrol at their word that not a single one of them during the uprising of George Floyd, when media was being targeted, not a single one of them deleted any emails or texts that had anything to do with what was going on that night. Only personal stuff. See, this is the reason why you have rules in place to stop people from covering up their crimes they're guilty of. Now, I'm not saying anyone specifically is guilty of a crime, but I see a lot of people destroying a lot of frickin' evidence as quickly, as fast as possible, and just saying, gee willikers, what were we supposed to do? Making it sound like the patrol is handing each other his recipes for potato salad online or something like that. This is a mess. And the city of Minneapolis has had it. And when you look at the behavior of the police, they are very justified in what they are tired of. They have had it with the city council, or they had it with the city council on some levels, on the mayor on other levels, but the police department for sure. And there's one other story I want to make sure I touch on here, which I think is just as important. The Minneapolis Police Department isn't doing a lot of arresting and solving of crimes right now. There are more unsolved crimes in Minneapolis right now compared to each of the previous 4 years. They range from property to violent crimes. Arrests have yet to be made in high-profile shootings of three children since April, which two killed them. There were just two of thousands of unresolved cases in Minneapolis. And these are just two of the thousands of unresolved cases in Minneapolis. WCCO asked University of St. Thomas professor Manjeet Renj to look at the data better to understand what's going on. Looking at the numbers, it tells you a trend, perhaps a strong trend, Renj said. Now, I'm going to be the first to say that I understand that Minneapolis police is understaffed. I also understand that the idea of law and order, the TV show, doesn't really exist. But at the same time, I don't think it's a mystery that when you compare this to past years, Minneapolis police just don't seem to be doing their job. Looking at the number, it tells you a trend, perhaps a strong trend, said Renj. The chair of software and data sciences examined crime and arrest data for the city for the last 5 years. Rates of arrest have gone down, so overall there are some crimes which unsolved cases were high. In certain categories, it has become even worse. Data shows there is more homicide so far this year than a full years of 2017, 18, and 19. Reg explains the overall arrest rate in the start of August was about 12% this year compared to 15 to 28% of the previous 4 years. On top of that, not only do you have the murders happening and there doesn't seem to be, you know, police officers, you know, anywhere near when the crimes happen. I mean, how many times have we had it where people are street racing in the middle of the street in Minneapolis and no one seems to care? There is an overall story here that when we get back, I'm going to take a break right now. I want to piece all this together about the Minneapolis Police Department and make sure everyone understands I'm highly skeptical of anyone that sits and tells me, oh, yeah, that the police department is going to survive this vote in November. Because I can tell you right now, I don't see how there's any. They do. Not after the stories we've seen in the last 2 weeks. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Robert Pilot, Native Roots Radio, coming up next. I Am Awake, if you're not sticking around for that, it is absolutely sensational. Native American radio, news from the Native American community right here, 6 o'clock, weeknights, right after my show. It's an absolute privilege to lead into that right here on AM 950. 952-946-6205. Let's just take a step back and look at the Minneapolis police through the eyes of anyone from the city of Minneapolis. You have the obvious, the death of George Floyd, the death of other African-American men and some women in this town. That the stories that the police tell us about how things went down don't match up. Reminder, it's very rare we've seen any kind of justice for an officer when they in the case of George Floyd, murder someone, or if there's like, you know, Jamar Clark or any of those other cases where, you know, there's dead individual or a seriously injured individual, generally the mentality's always been, oh, the police did the right thing. We'll take the police's story at word. You have the numerous stories over the last year of the racism that has permeated that police department, and you cannot deny that. That is, it is prevalent, it is there, it is, even in the Stalling story, it shows back up again. You have, once again, another story of police officers clearly breaking the law. Lying their butts off. And no accountability. Absolutely zero. You've got the destruction of records over the second precinct. You've got, you know, police officers from other departments who are involved erasing everything they can as quickly as they can, suspiciously. But then on top of that, you get the news story today where they're not even doing their job. They are hired to do a job. Patrol, protect and serve. That's what it says on the side of those Minneapolis police cars. Protect and serve. They're not solving crimes. They're not patrolling. It's somewhat laughable sometimes the response to 911 in the city of Minneapolis right now. I mean, they're hired to do a job, and right now, they don't even seem to be doing that. But then it gets worse when you look at what happened with Stallings. Because in that case, the police went out almost with a mindset of committing crimes. No, not almost. Went out with a mindset of freaking committing crimes. And they did. Opening fire on someone, hitting them square in the chest unannounced. What are you doing? That's a gangland shooting, for God's sakes. Not police work. Beating the guy senseless in the parking lot after he surrendered. Talking about how police officers like targeting the citizens of Minneapolis. That is called the opposite of police work. That would be like if you hire an architect and everything they build falls apart. By, you know, hiring a doctor and everyone they treat dies. So if you're going to look at me and act as if the language is going to be an issue, let me repeat once again what's going to happen on this ballot initiative. Shall the Minneapolis City Charter be amended to remove the police department or replace it with the department? Yep, done. Remove it. Because the city of Minneapolis is tired of your crap. And now all of a sudden you're out there like, well, chaos is going to ensue. I'll make an argument. Chaos is here right now. When police officers are conducting themselves as we are finding they're conducting themselves, they're not solving the crimes. They're not on patrol. How much worse could it get at this point? How much worse could it get? So You can sit there all day long and talk about, oh, you know, people need to understand there's going to be consequences here. No, people understand what the hell is going on in the city of Minneapolis. And they want to change. This is such an extraordinary moment. Not because these people are out of control and doing their own thing, but because they basically are fed up with a police department that not only is not doing the job they've been hired for, but seems to be actually doing the job of the criminals at the same damn time. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.